Gurr. And that's about it for this edition of Sunday Morning. Thank you for your company. I do hope you've enjoyed listening. Next week, my theme at the centre of the programme will be ballet music from the operas. And you can hear the great Kathleen Ferrier singing in Gluck's Orfeo, a thrilling on-stage recording. And you can also hear her in music from Elgar's The Dream of Gerontius. So, real treats in store there. As for Haydn, Ernest also may conduct the Symphony No. 84 in E-flat major. So, please make sure to join me same time next Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. Sunday Morning is a unique production for BBC Radio 3 with studio production this week by Neil Miners.
This summer, dip into the BBC Proms.
BBC Radio 3 new generation artist Louis Schwitzgebel is joined by the Royal String Quartet for a concert concluding with Richard Strauss's extraordinary Metamorphosen. And alongside it, Mahler's contemplative piano quartet movement, a rarely heard, tantalising torso of a work never completed. Join me, Petroc Trelawney, for the 6th BBC Proms Chamber Music Concert from Cadogan Hall in London, tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, you're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's 12 o'clock and time for Private Passions. Michael Barclay is deep in the Surrey Hills with the Director General of the National Trust, Helen Ghosh.
It's a beautiful, clear day, and I'm at the top of Leith Hill Tower, a wonderful 18th century Gothic creation. In fact, it looks a bit like a church tower without the church, and it rises nearly 70 feet over what is already the highest point in southeast England. You can see for miles over glorious countryside. And I've come here to meet Dame Helen Ghosh, a former top civil servant, and since 2012, the Director General of the National Trust. As such, she's in charge of some 600,000 acres of countryside. This countryside we're looking at now, Helen, I mean, we can see for miles to the north. I suppose that must be London.
Yes, in the distance you can see the Shard. And then if you look to the left, to the south, you're looking down to the South Downs. You can see Lancing Chapel on the horizon. And on a clear day, through one of the telescopes we've got up here, you can see ships on the channel.
It must be tempting to escape the desk altogether and just go visiting wonderful places.
Yes, sometimes I feel very guilty that I'm being paid to do things. About a week ago, I was just over the ridge to the south here on Bookham Commons, and I'd written in an internal blog that I write that I'd never heard a nightingale. And one of our rangers there said, "Come next week and hear a nightingale." So there I was, sitting on Bookham Commons with our ranger, waiting for the nightingale to sing. And then all of a sudden the sun came out from behind a cloud, the nightingale started to sing, the cuckoo in the distance started to cuckoo, and I thought, this is the most astonishing job to do.
Now, the first music you've chosen has lots of connections with the countryside and indeed the National Trust.
Yes, the first piece of music I've chosen is one of the songs from Britain's setting of Winter Words, poems by Thomas Hardy. It has lots of connections with what the Trust does. In a sense, it's a profoundly English piece of work. Thomas Hardy is very close to the Trust. We own his two houses, Maxgate and the cottage where he was born.
In Dorset.
In Dorset. Mm. But more profoundly, through his poetry, which in a sense, the older I get, I love more than the novels, I think he encapsulates that sense of capturing moments in time, the importance of capturing moments in time. And that's something, again, that we are constantly trying to do at our properties, at our places, in trying to make people have a sense of the importance of the past, but how the past impacts on the present. And that's why I picked this.
And why this particular song from the cycle Winter Words?
I picked this one because it's ultimately about man's longing for returning to a state of paradise. At the very end, the singer, in this case Peter Piers, and he does it as only Peter Piers could do it.
Especially how long?
How long? And what he's saying is, how long will it be before we can get back to that state of paradise?
Before Life and After, the final song to words by Thomas Hardy from Benjamin Britten's Winter Words, with Peter Piers, the tenor, and Britten playing the piano. Well, we've now climbed down from Leith Hill Tower and we're going to walk across this open woodland to nearby Leith Hill Place, another National Trust property, and one, actually, Helen, with a very distinguished musical connection.
Yes, Leith Hill Place was the childhood home of the composer Ralph Vaughan Williams, who gave it to the Trust in 1944 when he inherited it from his parents. He'd grown up here, and there are wonderful mementos, memories in the house of his childhood. But interestingly, when he inherited the place, I think he'd become a much more urban person than a country person. And he decided to donate it to us.
I suppose one of the problems with people leaving properties to the Trust is if they're not endowed, it's wonderful but another financial headache.
Yes. Some of our properties come with wonderful endowments, with acres of farmland, with lots of investment, and some, like Leith Hill Place, come with nothing. That's why, when we are walking around the house, you will see that it's not lavishly furnished, it's not spick and span. For many years, it was tenanted, and then it turned into a school. What we're deliberately doing is, in the spirit of the place, trying to evoke the history of the families of Ralph Vaughan Williams who lived here, but on a shoestring.
Well, let's hear some of his music. This is one of his most popular pieces. Probably you wish you could have the royalties from this to keep the house up.
What a wonderful idea.
It's the Fantasia, isn't it, on a theme by Thomas Tallis, which actually is rather wonderful for a programme where we're sort of featuring the National Trust, because it's steeped in English history and the idea of taking something old to model something new.
Yes, I think that idea about transforming the old into the century you're living in is absolutely at the heart of what we do. I chose this piece, in fact, because it was one of my father's favourites. And he always told a story about when he was a young man. He was a great veteran car enthusiast, and he describes a rally that he went on, that he helped to organise. And at one stage, he had to dress up as a monk in the ruins of Waverley Abbey, not far away from us here in Surrey. And to make the whole thing atmospheric, they played this piece of music. So it reminds me of my father.
the opening of the Fantasia on a Theme by Thomas Tallis by Ralph Vaughan Williams, performed by the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, directed by Neville Mariner. Well, Helen Ghosh, we've arrived at the front door of Leith Hill Place now. Vaughan Williams lived here, of course, when he was a child. It's a fine 18th century house, surrounded by sweeping lawns, huge mature trees, and we just heard a cuckoo, as well as the aeroplanes coming and going to Gatwick. Now, we'll put some pictures on the website so that anybody listening to the programme can not only conjure it up in their imagination, they can actually see it. How did the Vaughan Williams family come to have somewhere which was probably quite expensive to keep going? There must have been some money there somewhere.
Yes, it was bought in the 1840s by the Wedgwood family, Josiah Wedgwood III, who was married, in fact, to Charles Darwin's older sister, Caroline. So there are the most wonderful. It's not just got musical connections, it's got scientific connections, it's got business connections, it's got visual art connections. And then it comes to the Vaughan Williams family because Margaret Vaughan Williams, Ralph's mother, was a Wedgwood, and that's how it came into the Vaughan Williams family. So, in fact, kind of by chance.
It's really rather an imposing, fine house. I suppose what you would call, in terms of painting, beautifully distressed, if you know what I mean. I mean, it doesn't look kind of painted to the gills, does it?
No, it's very... It's not a normal kind of National Trust house, and we're testing how we might present it. We're very lucky to have a professional musician, Gabrielle Gale, as the curator for the house. And we've set her a real challenge, which is to say, present this house, evoke the spirit of place, but absolutely on a shoestring. And because of her background, because of her experience, she's done it beautifully. And she was the winner. Every year we have a competition for all our houses, all our properties, about the one that brings the place to life most vividly. Simon Jenkins, our chairman, chooses the winner, and Leith Hill Place was the winner this year.
Turning back to you yourself, Helen Ghosh, I think your first passion in life very much was ballet and dancing. You would like to have become a dancer.
Oh, yes. When I was about 10, I did the audition for the Royal Ballet School. I think my parents were slightly doubtful about it as a career, but it was my passion. Happily, I think in many ways, given what an enjoyable life and career I've had since then, I didn't get in. But watching ballet has been a consistent pleasure to me. And I suppose when I look back at the early classical music that filled my life as a child, as a teenager, a lot of it is that ballet music, whether it's the music of Tchaikovsky or Prokofiev specifically for ballet, or I think my first acquaintance with Chopin, for example, was because it was the music for Les Sylphides, one of the Michel Fokine ballets. So that was a very good introduction to classical music for me.
What about this piece, the Ravel Concerto for Piano and Orchestra?
This is the music for which the choreographer, the wonderful Kenneth McMillan, created a rather odd ballet, which isn't performed all that often, called La Fin du Jour. The designer, Anne McMillan, conceived this as though set in the 1930s. You had the bright young things on the beach during the first movement of the Ravel. The second movement, which I've picked, is a wonderful piece for two ballerinas and supporting male dancers. It's supposed to represent the, and I think this is a very 1930s word, aviatrixes, Amy Johnson and Amelia Earhart. And what they are doing, dressed in lovely kind of 1930s, all-in-one swimsuity things, is they are pretending to fly, supported by their male partners. And the music, I think, conveys that sense of floating and movement and beauty in a wonderful way. The other thing that fascinates me is that, to me, it's unmistakably French, in a way that the Vaughan Williams, or indeed the Britain, is unmistakably English. And I've always wanted to know how, whether that's just because we know the nationality or whether there is something in the music that conveys that.
Absolutely, even though Vaughan Williams studied with Ravel.
Oh, well, I never knew that, Nick.
Thank you.
the opening to the slow movement of Ravel's Piano Concerto in G major. The soloist was Jean-Yves Thibaudet, and Charles Dutoit was conducting the Montreal Symphony Orchestra. Well, Helen Gauche and I have now come into the hall of Leith Hill Place. Quite a grand entrance, isn't it?
It is, but it's still empty in the sense that some of our grand National Trust houses would be. But what we've tried to do is to fill it with objects, with information that convey immediately to people the spirit of the place.
But there is a piano over here as well, so you encourage people to play.
We encourage people to play. I have to say, we try to discourage the endless playing of chopsticks. We try and encourage people who have some musical knowledge to play, but the extent to which it's something the visitors really love, really enjoy, and comment on where they go is just astonishing.
Helen, as Director General of the National Trust, you have responsibility not only for this house, but hundreds of others. But you started your career really not, of course, as we said, as a ballet dancer, but instead went to Oxford to read modern history. And from there, you went into the civil service, I think about there for some 33 years, holding top jobs in several departments, including the Home Office and DEFRA, the Department for the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. And at that time, you were one of the very few female civil servants in a senior position. Did you feel you were pushing at a glass ceiling?
I think what was interesting, and I suppose I think about this very much as a historian, when I joined the civil service, there were a number of women at the top of the civil service, but there was very much a generation of women who'd remained single, almost certainly didn't have children, had joined perhaps during the war, and that's when they'd risen up. I think I still felt, in a sense, that I was part of a pioneering community, in that I was one of the first generation, with one or two honourable exceptions, who managed to combine rising to the top of the civil service with family life, with bringing up children. In that sense, I felt it was very important to convey to other women that it was possible to maintain some kind of work-life balance, that you could achieve it too. So in that sense, I did feel a model.
Let's go back to those Oxford days, because I think having not become a ballet dancer, you did sing instead.
Not in a very professional way. I was very lucky in that then, as I think now, there was a choir called the Kodály Choir, named after Zoltán Kodály, the Hungarian composer, which anyone could join. And although I could roughly read music, I'm very much one of those singers where as long as somebody else starts, I can join in. So I had some enormously enjoyable times singing with that choir. The other context in which I sang was the choir at the Oxford University Catholic Chaplaincy. And again, I think I was very lucky in that the conductor when I was there was a man called Andrew Jones. But he picked wonderful pieces from the English choral tradition, Tallis and Bird. But again, it introduced me to some of that tradition in a way that, well, it's a love that's lived with me ever since.
But the piece you've chosen is, in fact, Mozart, the Mass in C minor. Was this a piece you sang in the chorus for?
Yes, this was another piece that I sang with the Kodály Choir. It's a wonderful piece, wonderful fugues, wonderfully cheerful, swinging pieces like the Hosanna in Excelsis. But singing in it was the first time I'd ever heard it. And the first time I ever heard this part, the Et Incarnatus Est, was in the performance itself, and I've never forgotten that moment.
It's extraordinarily tender and reverential, isn't it?
It's extraordinarily tender and reverential, and the other thing which I think is remarkable is that you can scarcely tell what is a musical instrument and what is a voice, that sense of the voice becoming a musical instrument.
Thank you.
That also reminds me of the nightingales I heard in the woods last week. And the ranger telling me that sometimes to get the nightingales to sing, he played their song on his whistle and then the nightingale would reply. And in a sense, we're hearing that there.
Et incarnatus est. Music from the second section of the Credo from Mozart's Mass in C minor. John Elliott Gardiner was conducting the English Baroque soloists, and the soloist was Sylvia McNair. Well, for this special edition of Private Passions, we've come to Leith Hill Place in Surrey with the Director General of the National Trust, Helen Ghosh. And you can find details of all her music on the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website. We're in a kind of terraced room here. It's a drawing room, but I think it's known as a terraced room, isn't it? With a grand piano, some comfortable sofas, looking out over the lawns at the back of the house.
Yes, this is where we hold a series of musical events over the summer with professional and semi-professional musicians. And this is where we will hold the kind of community events, particularly with children and others, that we are so keen to hold here.
You live in Oxford, Helen, with your husband Peter, who's a historian at the university. And I think he has quite a huge collection of music, which makes me wonder whether you have similar tastes or diverging tastes.
Well, he's certainly been an enormous influence on my musical education. Yes, he has an enormous collection, many of them still on old vinyl, but increasingly the house is packed with his CD collections. He's very knowledgeable. It's something that gives him profound pleasure. He's very opinionated. I remember coming once out of a film of La Traviata, and he said, the trouble with Verdi, it's just one good tune after another.
It's a very polite way of saying he's slightly snobbish, musically speaking.
No, he's just very particular. I think on our first date, he talked to me at length about the pleasure he took in a Schoenberg string quartet. And I thought
always a winner with the girls.
Always a winner with the girls. Well, you see, I married him. Reader, I married him. But I did know that for the rest of my life, I would be trying to keep up.
Well, there is a funny connection in the next piece, which joins...
It does indeed.
Joins these ideas together, doesn't it?
Well...
Matrimonially.
Matrimonially. And it also links back to my pleasure in dancing. Hmm. I have picked one of the transcriptions done by members of the new Viennese school, Schoenberg, Berg and Webern, of the music of Johann Strauss, who was one of their musical heroes. I think, again, it picks up this theme of how you can bring into the current century the traditions of the past. So it's just, as I say, a wonderful updating of something traditional and something that makes me want to dance around the kitchen.
Well, this is Wein, Weib und Gesang, wine, woman and song. Thank you. Music from Wein, Weib und Gesang, Wine, Woman and Song, by Johann Strauss, in an arrangement by Alban Berg, performed by the Alban Berg Quartet. I'm wondering, Helen Goetsch, how you see the role of the National Trust in terms possibly of moving from an organisation that some people may have seen as sort of cosy and preserving to something which is more campaigning and active.
I think we can do the two things at the same time. If we can make people love the places that we look after as much as we love them, then in a sense that's a campaign in itself. I do believe, and back to our purpose, the purpose that Parliament gave us was to promote the preservation of special places. And sometimes that does mean we have to stand up and be a campaigning organisation. But I think we have to pick those moments carefully. If we became shrill, if we became the kind of organisation that was campaigning on one issue one week and another the next, I don't think people would listen to us.
What do you think will be the major challenges facing you? Is it finance? Is it climate change? What?
I think the profound challenge that faces us, and in a sense has always faced us, is persuading, engaging, making the public believe that what we do is relevant to their lives. We need that public support, whether it's moral support or financial support, in order to do our jobs, which is fundamentally to look after the special places. Conservation is the heart of our purpose. We can only do that conservation if we can afford the investment, if we can afford to employ the people, if we can afford to carry out the conservation projects that we need to do. So there's a virtuous circle of engaging people, having resources and skills, and being able to do our conservation work. If people ceased to believe that what we did was relevant, that was something that could enrich their lives in every way, and that support disappeared, then we wouldn't be able to do our job.
Ella Fitzgerald next.
Ella Fitzgerald, someone I love listening to, someone who I think represents, and I think there is a link back to the Mozart piece. Whenever I listen to her, you hear a voice being used as a musical instrument. I could have picked all sorts of examples of Ella's singing. I love her performances of Rodgers and Hart, for example. But I thought to bring home that point about voices as musical instruments, I'd pick this wonderful example of scat singing, All of Me.
All of me, why not take all of me? Baby, can't you see? I'm no good without you. Take my lips, I'll never use them. Take my arms, I want to lose them. Your goodbye left me with eyes that cry. Tell me, how can I go on, dear, without you? You took the part that once was my heart, so why not take all of me? All of me, why not take all of me? Can't you see I'm no good without you? Na 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 na
Almost impossible to sing along to, as I've discovered.
Ella Fitzgerald and All of Me. Well, I imagine from the way you talk about it that you give all of you, Helen Ghosh, to your job. And I wonder how you find time for music and what other things you do to relax.
I suppose music is a kind of backdrop to my life. We try and hear live music as often as we can. I love the coffee concerts which are held on Sunday mornings at the Holywell Music Rooms in Oxford, for example. And of course, I listen to music in the car if I'm driving from one place to another. I try and travel on trains and be environmentally friendly, but this job inevitably involves all kinds of travel.
And you have an allotment.
And I have an allotment. It's a rather... I'm afraid I'm surrounded by rather more professional gardeners than myself. And as you imply, I don't have that much time to devote to it. But I think it's wonderfully relaxing to be focused for a while solely on whether your courgette plant will germinate or what on earth has happened to all your black currants, rather than think about the day job.
Alfred Brendel playing Schubert next. And I think you probably actually saw him do this live, did you?
Yes. I think the first time I ever heard this piece was when he performed it in Oxford Town Hall when I was a student. I think he'd just done a series of recordings of the late Schubert piano sonatas. And again, it was just something that captured my imagination immediately. And the sense, again, going back to music as songs, that he's a singing. He's a composer who sings for me. And I think this sonata in particular and the way it opens, that's what it means for me.
Thank you.
opening to the first movement of Schubert's Piano Sonata in B-flat, played by Alfred Brendel. Well, Helle goes for the final stop on our tour of Leith Hill Place. We've come up to the attic, where your house manager, Gabrielle Gale, and sound artist, Jay Harris, have put together a rather wonderful soundscape about Vaughan Williams's life and music. Let's hear a bit of it now, with Ursula Vaughan Williams, the composer's widow, describing his death.
Ralph died very early in the morning, and as simply and quietly as he had lived. Our great friend Gil Jenkins and the doctor, who is also a friend, were there, as he'd been restless and unable to sleep, and had difficulty breathing. But the doctor gave him an injection, which relaxed all the tension, and he slipped away with his head on my shoulder and his hand in mine. I opened our window to the dawn, and after a time I played his pastoral symphony, and the music flowed quietly and serenely out into the still morning. He stayed there, untouched by anyone but me, lying quietly in his room so that I could be in and out of it, which was wonderful and right. And the house was full of roses brought by his friends. And there was a feeling of a birthday, a gentleness and lovingness that filled the whole place.
Well, rather extraordinary to hear the lark ascending in Ralph Vaughan and Williams's childhood home as we ascended up to the attic. And Helen, I'm sure he would be very delighted with what the Trust is doing here, because he was so keen on ensuring that music was for everyone, was at the heart of communities. There's a lovely quote which I came across on the way up. The composer must not shut himself up and think about art. He must live with his fellows and make his art an expression of the whole community. If we seek for art, we shall not find it.
And again, that's so wonderfully in keeping with the whole spirit of the National Trust. We are only able to do what we do because we have an army of volunteers, I think about 70,000 at the last count, who help us, who devote their passion and love for our places to what we're here to do. And Leith Hill Place is a fabulous example of this. Gabrielle has managed to recruit, attract, I think around 60 volunteers. I gather one of the volunteers has put together a choir in residence who will be performing this summer and holding all sorts of events for the community, outdoors and indoors, so that they can feel that Leith Hill Place is really their place.
Well, thank you so much, Helen Ghosh, for this fascinating tour of Leith Hill Place and for sharing your private passions.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
In that edition of Private Passions, recorded at Leith Hill Place in Surrey, Michael Barclay's guest was Helen Ghosh, the Director General of the National Trust. The programme was produced by Jane Greenwood and it was a Loftus production for BBC Radio 3. If you go to the podcasts page of the Radio 3 website, you'll find details of how to download that programme and others in the series. And Michael Barclay's guest at the same time next week is the materials scientist Mark Miodovnik.
Words and Music has gone away, is taking a holiday, is on leave, wishes you were here.
And the question is, how shall we spend it? Shall we patronise Margate this year, where I'm told they've repainted the pier?
It was hell. First days on hiking trips always are. Every step was a struggle. Heading
down. Right, you two, this is a long car journey. I want you two to be good.
And now you must do nothing for a week and enjoy it.
Words and Music would like to wish all Radio 3 listeners a very happy holiday. I Need a Holiday. This evening at 6:15 here on BBC Radio 3.
And it rained in torrents, drenching every horse and sheep and yoke.
Yes, it sounds rather like my visit to Scotland last week. Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to this Sunday afternoon here on BBC Radio 3.
In a couple of minutes, a song recital from the BBC Proms, another chance to hear last Monday's Chamber Music Prom, a concert given by Anna Schwanewilms and Malcolm Martineau. At 2, Lucy Skeeping presents the Early Music Show. At 3 o'clock, we've Choral Evensong, and that's followed by another chance to hear a recent prom by the BBC Philharmonic, featuring music by Sibelius, Frank Bridge and Sir Peter Maxwell Davis. That's at 4 o'clock this afternoon. That's all here on BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's a minute after 1 o'clock, and here now is the latest BBC News. Downing Street has confirmed that work is underway to supply non-lethal equipment to Kurdish forces fighting Islamic State militants in northern Iraq in the coming days. It says the supplies will include night vision equipment and body armour. The government has also announced that it's appointed a security envoy to the Kurdistan region. Iraqi government forces say they've defeated a militant attack on one of the country's biggest oil fields at Beji, north of Tikrit. The refinery has been the site of several battles between the two sides over the past few months. Ukraine is to spend almost £2 billion re-equipping its armed forces over the next 3 years. The announcement was made by the country's president, Petro Poroshenko, at a military parade in Kiev to mark Independence Day. The display came as fighting continues in the east of the country between pro-Russia separatists and Ukrainian military forces. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has repeated a warning to Palestinians to leave any site in Gaza where militants are operating. He said all such locations were a target for Israeli attacks. Speaking at a cabinet meeting, Mr. Netanyahu also said the military campaign would continue until its objectives were achieved. Two Palestinians are reported to have been killed in Israeli airstrikes in Gaza this morning. It's reported that a British citizen who's contracted Ebola in Sierra Leone could be flown to London for treatment. An isolation unit has been set up at the Royal Free Hospital. A football player from Cameroon has been killed after being struck on the head by an object thrown from the stands at the end of a match in the Algerian league. Albert Ebosse had scored his team's only goal when they lost yesterday. And the weather. Rain will begin moving into parts of southwest England, Wales and Northern Ireland this afternoon. Other parts will remain dry for the rest of the day, with the best of any sunshine in the east and the north. The rain will spread eastwards during the night, and Bank Holiday Monday will be wet and windy in most parts. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at almost 4 minutes past one. So, in just under an hour, Lucy Skeeping and her guests look at the history of the bassoon. That's the early music show at 2 o'clock. Before it, here on Radio 3, another chance to hear last Monday's Chamber Music Prom. It's presented by Petroc Trelawney.
Hello, welcome back to Cadogan Hall and the fifth concert in the 2014 BBC Proms Chamber Music Festival. Today's recital part of the celebrations running right across the season, marking the 150th anniversary of Richard Strauss's birth. Well, I'm thrilled that today we can welcome the acclaimed German soprano Anna Schwanewilms, whose recent operatic appearances include Die Frau in Schatten at the Met in New York and Rosenkavalier at Vienna State Opera. She'll be joined by the pianist Malcolm Martineau. They are here at short notice in place of the indisposed Alice Coote. Well, Strauss's songs later, to begin Debussy, his Prose Lyrique, a group of four songs that he created in the 1890s. He wrote the texts himself. Setting prose was very fashionable at the time, as fellow composer Charles Gounod had written a few years earlier. The infinite variety of stress in prose offers the composer new horizons which will save him from monotony and uniformity. Debussy's first song is called Of Dreams. The night has a woman's softness, and the old trees beneath the golden moon dream of her who has just passed by. Then of the shore, dusk falls over the sea like a frayed white silk, of flowers opens in the tedium so desolately green of sorrow's hothouse, the flowers entwine my heart. And finally, of evening, Sunday over the cities, Sunday in people's hearts, Sunday for the little girls singing with childish voices. To perform Debussy's Prose Lyrique, please welcome Anna Schwanewilms and Malcolm Martineau.